Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. It's 7:30, so it's time to talk to John Giles. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
We'll get on to the FA Cup final in a minute, but first, at the end of the Premier League season, it's a time of managerial change and neither West Ham or Everton have wasted any time. Both David Moyes and Sam Allardyce, it feels as though they did the job they were being asked to do and was expected of them. They kept their team safe, but ultimately it seems it wasn't enough. Were West Ham and Everton right to sack them?
Well, it's very difficult to know, Nathan. I thought both of them did very good jobs in different ways. I think Moyes was always going to be until the end of the season, and then look at it. I think Allardyce actually signed a two-year contract. So I saw in the paper, Moyes was talking over the weekend. I think he wanted certain conditions if they wanted him to take over, and I don't think he was getting those conditions, Nathan, at all. So obviously he left. In Allardyce's case, I think, you know, I think he did a reasonably good job. But the fact was, the supporters didn't want him. You know, they didn't want him from the start, and they were talking about the style of football. See, once you get out of trouble, Nathan, then, you know, eating bread is soon forgotten. But they didn't take to him. Actually, the West Ham supporters didn't take to him when he was at West Ham, and he got him out of second division, what was the old second division, and into the Premiership. And I just read in the paper that it was a bit ironic. It was a bit funny but cruel in a certain way. When Everton were getting beaten last week by West Ham, which is Sam's old team, the two set supporters were saying, what a load of rubbish, at Sam, you know, because they just didn't take to him. And if the supporters don't take to you, and it got to the stage where they were really, really having a go at him, I don't think you can keep the manager on, Nathan. You know, and I think that's what happened there. I don't think he's going to be well paid off as well, Sam, but that's somebody he wanted. I think he wanted to have a go at what was a bigger club than he'd ever managed before. But if the crowd don't like you, ultimately they can get rid of you, Nathan, because they paid the prices, they paid the season tickets and all the various things, and they just didn't like him at all. Didn't like his brand of football at all. So I think he had to go. He'd be well paid off. Moyes, I think, they might have wanted to keep him, but they wouldn't give him the conditions that he wanted.
Allardyce has never been shy in talking about his record as a manager and his ability to keep teams in the Premier League. Has the past 4 or 5 months maybe shown the flaws as a manager, and even though he got the England job, why he didn't get one of the top jobs at club level in English football, that even though they've been safe pretty much since January, he didn't seem to have the ability to get out of survival mode, to get a team playing nice, attractive football, even when there wasn't a huge amount of pressure on?
No, I think he was what he was, Nathan. You know, I don't think any of his team ever played attractive football. I remember going back to Bolton where he had his best spell, and he did a very good Bolton to keep them where they were. And the Bolton's fans were happy with that at that particular time. Well, they'd be happy about it now as well if they were in the same position. But he never had the name of being an attractive football-playing manager. West Ham, they couldn't stand him at all. I mean, they were delighted. And I, you know, in terms of points and position, he was in a good position. But he was ideal. I mean, if you remember when he went to Sunderland, Nathan, they were down and out. He saved them. Crystal Palace, he saved them. So I think he's very, very good at that. But what you see, with eating bread is soon forgotten. Once you save these particular clubs, then we say, what about the attractive football? And I don't think he's able to do that, to be honest. And I think another thing about him, Nathan, with his demeanour over the years and his statements and what he did with the England job, I don't think people like him. You know, I think he's arrogant. He's always blown his own trumpet. He did what he did with England, which was disgraceful. And he said years ago, my name was Sam Allardyce, I'd have one of the top jobs. He was always envious of the foreign managers coming. So I don't think he was liked by any of the clubs that he was at, and that obviously has a big part to play in when you want to get rid of the manager.
West Ham were in even more trouble when David Moyes came in, and ultimately, even though there were a few hairy moments over the last few weeks, again they survived. They finished 13th, and a lot of the criticism of Moyes was again about the style of football and not playing the West Ham way. Now, for a lot of us, we're not quite sure what the West Ham way is, considering as long as I can remember, they've been sort of a yo-yo club. We've had moments, but generally a team battling around mid-table, the lower halves of the Premier League. Like, are West Ham supporters right to talk about the West Ham way about 1966 and still expect the team of Bobby Moore to be...
No, I think they're expecting too much. I don't think they turned on Moyes, to be funny enough, Nathan. I think they were okay with Moyes. I think they realised what a difficult situation they were in. And towards the end there, you know, they won a few matches and they won and scored a few goals. So I don't think they were as critical, the West Ham supporters were as critical as the Everton supporters were to Allardyce. Mm. And they just didn't want Allardyce from the start. And the longer it went on, even though they were getting a few points, they were having to go at him. I don't think they actually had to go at Moyes. I think they were quite happy with Moyes in a certain way, that they knew what a difficult position they were in, and he did get them out of trouble. I think actually Moyes forced the situation at West Ham, because I don't think like Billich last year, I think, was very badly treated by the owners of the club there, and I think they were in charge of bringing the players in and that. And I think, from what I read, I think Moyes wanted to have the control to do that, and they haven't given it to him. So he actually walked. They didn't kick him out. I mean, Allardyce actually was kicked out at Everton there this week. Moyes wasn't. Now, they might have kicked him out in the end, but I think Moyes said before he met the director that there were certain conditions he wanted, and I don't think I'm going to get them, and if I don't get them, I'll be off. And that's what happened.
So do we just need to start looking at these managerial appointments in a different way in the modern game? Two men come in, experience, know how to get a club to survive, did the job, get handsomely rewarded for it, the clubs move on, and those two managers probably end up in the same cycle again, and actually, nobody's particularly heartbroken about it.
No, well, that's the way the game has gone, Nathan, because everything is survival now. I think the higher the television money has gone, which I believe it's gone up to about 200 million now, to be in the Premiership.
Yeah.
So obviously there's going to be more panic. I mean, if you look at Tony Pulis, Tony Pulis was sacked, I think, in October, having done a really good job for West Brom for a few years. Now, they went down, they hardly won a match after that, so they couldn't have done any worse holding on to Tony Pulis. And it's like a merry-go-round. You know, if you look at Hughes went to Southampton, having been sacked at Stoke, and Stoke went down. You know, there's just panic. I think there's panic in the amount of money that the clubs can lose going out of the Premiership, and it's real. Have to do something about it now. Instead of sometimes, Nathan, they could be a bit more patient and give them more chance, the managers more chance to do it. It's like a merry-go-round now. It's pure panic.
At the other end, it looks as though Mikel Arteta is going to be the next Arsenal manager. He's certainly a strong favourite for the position.
Yeah.
It'll be his first ever managerial job, though he's been working with Pep Guardiola for the last couple of seasons at Manchester City.
Can I just hold you there? He is not going to be the manager at Arsenal. He's going to be the coach. Arsenal have a system in place now, which they did before Christmas, even in Wenger's time, where there are three new individuals there. One is the director of recruitment, and they've got names for the other two. They are going to be picking the players. They're going to be in charge. They were in charge, actually. You know, the Christmas sales, Sanchez and Mkhitaryan and giving Ozil a big contract, they did that. Wenger didn't do that, right? So what the owner said is, there's no manager will have the same powers that Wenger's had in this club over many years. So there's a director of recruitment and two other directors as well. So if Arteta goes there, he's going to be given players to coach, Nathan. He's not going to be the manager.
You get the blame
if they're not doing well.
Yeah. So then what we're talking about with managers leaving clubs on a fairly regular basis, is this the wise move from Arsenal, that there isn't one overarching figure in charge of everything, that actually you can keep the likes of Sven Mislintat, who they brought in from Borussia Dortmund, as one of these sort of directors of recruitment, but ultimately a director of football, that they remain in place for the next 10 years and your head coaches come and go?
Well, that's what's going to happen, you see. Unfortunately for Arteta coming in, everybody thinks he's going to be the manager. And if he doesn't get the results, he's going to get the blame. But he hasn't got a free hand to do what needs to be done, Nathan. Like, I know from my experience in football, getting players in, recruiting players and letting players go is 90% of the job, right? Every manager has a vision of what he wants on the pitch. And to fulfil that vision, you get Joe Bloggs in to play on the left side. They're your choices to do it. That's your vision. Now, if somebody else is picking the players to come in and they're picking the players to come out, 90% of your job or authority is lost.
So, right? Yeah, go on.
So when with the lads that they have, you mentioned his name there. I can't mention his name, but Arsenal, right? He's going to be doing that with his team. He's going to be getting the players in. And he's going to say to whoever's in the coach, there's your players, now you get on with it. And if the man and the coach doesn't do well, which has happened at other clubs, he can say, well, I bought you £80 million worth of players. And the coach says, yeah, but they weren't my players.
Do you know what I mean, Nathan?
I
totally get what you mean. I'm just wondering if they're looking at Arteta and they're looking at these younger coaches now in a different way, that actually the expectation is, we've provided you with the players, show your coaching talents, develop this player into what you want.
Show your coaching talents then. But if you've got players in and you're responsible for results, Nathan, you want the players in that you want, right? Like, if you've got a player in you don't want, you don't rate him. All the coaching in the world is not going to make him a good player.
Mm.
That's the choice of the players. That's why it's a 90% of the job is getting in the players that you want. See, nearly all the clubs are doing it now with the director of football. Now, the one club that didn't do it, and he was in a position to insist that they wouldn't, was Guardiola. Guardiola, they wanted him, and he got the conditions, I can buy the players, which he obviously does. But it's 90% of the job. I keep stressing that, Nathan. Like, there's managers are in now that have done good jobs, and then the director. See, if you go to Everton for the start of the season when Koeman was there, right, they signed Walsh as the director of football from Leicester because he bought a few good players. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Now, who bought the players at Everton?
Recently.
Right. Last season, at the start of the season.
Mm. Yeah, well, Steve Walsh did.
Was sacked. Who bought the players then? It had to be Walsh because he's the director of football. If he's not buying the players in, what's he doing there?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, Koeman paid the price in the end. Now, Walsh has got sacked this year because they're getting a different director of football in at Everton, which they're doing in most clubs. But they were, I tell you, in my opinion, they weren't Koeman's choices. But he's told, you get on with it. It's like Wenger said last year when he was told that there's going to be a director of football. He said, I don't mind taking the blame for the players that I brought in and the responsibility for the players I brought in, but I don't want to be criticised for players I didn't bring in. And that's what happens. It's 90% the job, and that's about four times I've said it now, and I can't say it often enough, that when you're a manager of a club, getting the right players in and getting the right players out is 90% of the job. And if a director of football is doing that, then he's taken 90% of the job and authority away from the manager. And the manager ultimately then will be judged by the players that he didn't bring in, and you'll find out he'll be sacked, but the director of football will then say, I've got him 90 million more spent on players, and he didn't do the right job with them. But they were never his choice in the first place.
But is it a possibility? So say City and that example. So Bagheristain, who's above Guardiola, who he worked with at Barcelona, who arrived at City a couple of years in advance of Guardiola and was ultimately responsible for bringing him, and they sort of have that cohort from Barcelona there.
Yes.
And that works because they're all on a similar level and a similar understanding.
They were desperate to get Guardiola. Right? Most managers are desperate to get a job, and they take them under any circumstances. Guardiola was different. Guardiola had a reputation at Barcelona and Bayern Munich that these guys wanted him. So he could name his price, and he could name the conditions that they wanted. So before he went in, he said to these two guys, he worked with them before, right, lads, these are the conditions that I'd win under. Certainly, you can recruit the players from me, but you're only doing what I'm asking you or telling you to do in the players. I'm not having your players. Now, if you don't agree with that now, I'm not coming here. Most managers, 99% of the other managers, don't have that authority to get those conditions before they go in, Nathan. Mm. And if you go back to Brendan Rodgers at Liverpool, for example, when he went to Liverpool, they had six people in a committee for picking the players and letting the players go. Six players, six people on the committee to do that. And what they said, you see, there's a few tricks in it. What they said at the time was, Brendan always has the last say on the players that we want.
Hmm.
But what happens there, Nathan? They give Rodgers, six players that they've picked out, right? So he gets the last pick on their six players, but there's a seventh player that he wants that's not on the list.
And he's just got to put up with it. We all know how that ended.
Well, look at Balotelli.
Yeah.
For example, there's no way Rodgers bought Balotelli. They thought they were being clever. They were getting him for 60 million, and they do a job on him, and they get 35 million for him. Brendan actually had to go along with it. And what he said at one time, I look Balotelli in the eyes. Never hear such bullshit, you know. And Brendan knew. But Brendan, you see, Brendan, the two things he could have done, say, listen, I'm not putting up with this, I'm off. Right? Or I'll have to go along with it, which he did. And it proved to be a total disaster. But that's what happens in the clubs where it stopped the manager having the real power, apart from Guardiola. Guardiola could lay down the conditions, Nathan, going in. If you don't agree to these conditions, I won't be coming here. And they were desperate to get him, quite rightly. And they've left him alone. In other words, if he says, Job, look at all the players that he bought. They were definitely his players. And look at the success it's brought. Now, he was buying the best, some of the best players in the world. But he was in a position of power to get those conditions. Most managers are desperate to get a job.
Yeah.
If Arteta goes to Arsenal, he'd be delighted to get that job as coach. And he'll put up with anything. Right? And he won't say a dicky board about it. The managers can't say, because the supporters will say, well, why are you putting up with it?
Yeah, why'd you take the job in the first place?
Have to play the game. And that's what if Arteta, actually, Arsenal are not making any secret of it. What they're saying is, he's going to be the coach. We, the committee, us three, the director of recruitment and that, we're running the club now. They're making no bones about it. They said it to Wenger before Christmas. And look at the mess they made over the Christmas, Nathan.
Mm.
Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang. There's no way Wenger signed them. Ozil was supposed to, but they were putting the machine to have give Ozil 300 grand a week because Sanchez went. I mean, that they've made the actually, since they've come in, they've made the situation worse for Arsenal. They're a total shambles now. And they'll be the, like, if you appoint a manager, you appoint him for his expertise. But if you take the power of buying the players in that he wants and the players he wants to get rid of, there is no expertise left.
Yeah, there's a lot in it. We'll talk more about it if and when Mikel Arteta is appointed as Arsenal head coach over the coming weeks. We're going to take a quick break. We want to talk about the FA Cup final and the passing of Ray Wilson as well. Stay with us.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're welcome back. John Giles is still with us. 53106 is the text number. So the FA Cup final takes place on Saturday evening. Manchester United against Chelsea. We're going to be reminiscing to 30 years ago with Laurie Sanchez on the football show a little bit later on. John, you're vastly experienced in FA Cup finals, and in many ways, that 88 final, Wimbledon beating Liverpool, is one of the last great finals. It was probably in the next 5 years where it started to lose a little bit of a relevance, and then at the turn of the century when Manchester United pulled out, lost almost all its relevance. And it's taken a huge amount away from English football in that now it's all about the title. And do you sense current players value an FA Cup medal as much as you did 40, 50 years ago?
I think they do, Nathan. I think that the players love the glory of it and the supporters love the glory of it. But unfortunately, the supporters have no say in it now because it's all about money. There's no real money in the FA Cup, Nathan. Like if Manchester United are playing Crewe, say, for example, at Old Trafford, Crewe get a third of the gate, the FA get a third of the gate, Manchester United only get a third of the gate. So in relation to qualifying for the Champions League, where there's immediately 10 million in it, that's what's caused all the problems. It's not worth the club's while. The glory is still there for the fans. The fans will go. They love winning the cup. So will the players. But unfortunately, the way it's gone, there's more pressure on the managers to stay in the Premiership than there is to win the FA Cup. But you'll find on Saturday, you wouldn't be able to get a ticket for this match. Manchester United supposed to be there in droves. There'll be hundreds of thousands looking for a ticket as well, along with Chelsea. So it's still a great event, but it's not. Doesn't have the importance that it had and the glamour that it had years ago. There's no doubt about that, Nathan.
I know when you won the Cup in 72, it was an unusual situation where the league wasn't finished and you were going for the double and ultimately you lose out on the final day of the season. But even still, would you have looked back then at that season as, yeah, a real successful season? Were the cup winners?
Well, everything is relative, Nathan. We needed a point at Wolves to win the double. Mm. Now, we have to play on the Monday. Actually, we played four matches in seven. There was a bit of a story on it. The FA didn't like Don, and I think it was the manager, I think it was Ramsey at the time, we wanted to play on the Wednesday. From the see, we played the previous week, Saturday, Monday, Saturday, Monday, right, which is 4 days and eight games. And the Don, I think, asked Alf Ramsey, could the players, they had to meet on the Monday, no later than 12 o'clock, the England team players, to play on the Wednesday. And Don said to Ramsey, is it okay if the lads turn up on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Play on Wednesday or whatever. Anyway, to extend it, you know. And Ramsey said, well, I need the players on Monday in Wales by 12 o'clock. So there's no way they were looking for an extension. In other words, we played Saturday. Can we have an extension to play on later on in the week? And Ramsey said no, because he'd fallen out with Don, because Don wasn't great at releasing players, Nathan. And Ramsey was getting his own back. But that was the build-up. But we came back on the coach from Wolves, and it was like a funeral, to be honest.
Right.
We'd won on the Saturday, but having won on the Saturday, we needed a draw to win the double, and we got beaten.
Yeah.
And we'll come back. I was sitting beside Peter Lorne. Peter was a great attitude. I mean, they had a do laid on in the Queen's Hotel, which was laid on at night, you know, and nobody went in except me and Peter. Peter said to me, John, he says, we've had a great season. He says, we've won the cup. We're just beaten in the league. He said, I'm going in for a drink. And I said, well, I'll go in with you, Peter. But we're the only two that went in, Nathan. Because you're only as good as your last match. And we needed a draw. We didn't get it to win the double. So the cup match, we didn't celebrate the cup. We had to leave immediately after the cup. We had to leave the Wembley to go to Wolverhampton. Didn't celebrate it. And Peter said, look, we haven't even celebrated the cup. We won the cup. It's been a great season. And there was only two of us went in for a drink. Peter always had a great attitude. But it was a blow. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Listen, everybody has blows during their football careers, and there were FA Cup finals that you lost, and I'm sure they're difficult to cope with. But that year in particular, you're going for the double. And back then, when the double was this huge thing, I know Arsenal had won it the year before, and Spurs famously won it in 61. But that would have taken that Leeds side to a whole new level.
Oh, definitely. It was a huge blow. In those days, you had 42 matches. You have 38 matches. We had four matches more than you normally have, than you have today. It would have been a great achievement, there's no doubt about that. And we knew that. I mean, it was a blow. It was a real blow. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they say we win the double was... There was only the Spurs teams before that in 61 and Arsenal the season before. There weren't many teams won the double in those days. But that's... Yeah, you have to put up with it, you know. That's the game. You win some, you lose some, and when the season starts again, then you've got to get up and got to go again.
Mm. I wanted to talk to you just before we finish up, John, about Ray Wilson, who passed away yesterday. He had a brilliant career, played for Huddersfield, played for Everton, 63 caps for England, and was part of the England squad that won the World Cup in 1966. One of the more unheralded members of the squad. When you're going through the names, he's not the first one that comes to mind. What type of man was he?
Well, I didn't know him very well. I played against him quite a lot. He was a terrific player. He was one of the new fullbacks coming into the game in those days, the smaller guys that were quicker. Like in my time, when I went into the game first, Nathan, there were big, strong lads at the back. They weren't particularly quick, and they dive in a bit. And as the years went by, those fullbacks got smaller and quicker. And you had Cohen on the right side, you had Ray Wilson, you had Tony Dunn, who was a great player for us at Ireland, all small guys, but you couldn't go past them. And he was a top class player. But what you'll find with fullbacks in great teams, like if I said to you who were the great players for Brazil, I know it's going back a long time before your time, you'd say Pelé and all the great players. You never mention the fullbacks, and that happens with the great teams, like Cohen and Wilson, hardly get a mention because you got Bobby Charlton and Bobby Moore and Alan Ball and Roger Hunt who were score goal scorers and that. But he was a terrific player and a good lad. From what I know of him, Nathan, he was a really good lad.
There was a story as well I wanted to touch upon about Nobby Stiles, your brother-in-law, which was in the Independent yesterday. Ian Herbert was writing about his health struggles, and the headline was "How Football Failed Nobby Stiles, the Manchester United and England icon struggling with dementia." And we've spoken to you before about Nobby Stiles' struggle with Alzheimer's and vascular dementia over the last 15 years or so, and the frustration he talks about here of the family in particular of, okay, there's a monetary side of things, but also the lack of research undertaken in recent years while Nobby Stiles is still with us, while he is still alive, into a link between simply heading a football and degenerative brain disease. Is it something that is a huge source of frustration for the family?
I don't think there's much emphasis on the cause of it, Nathan, because nobody knows. I know there should be more inspections and whatever needs to be done on it, but the fact is I think it's going to take an awful long time to prove one way or the other where heading the ball really causes this particular illness. I mean, I played with 16 lads at Leeds and none of them have had Alzheimer's through heading the ball. I think what would be a concern for ex-players like Nobby and that the lack of, I think, offers of help from the PFA in particular. Because I don't think it matters how they got the disease, that they should be looked after and treated much better than they have been in recent times.
I was surprised as well at the lack of contact from Manchester United in recent years, considering what a hero he is around the club.
Well, if you look back at all the lads, you know, the 66 lads, there's a few of them have Alzheimer's. Ray Wilson had Alzheimer's, I think Roger Hunt has Alzheimer's now, Martin Peters. I don't see anything being proactive from the Football Association, from the clubs that they played from, and particularly from the PFA. The PFA are the team, they're the Professional Footballers Association. They're the union members. And, you know, I was part of the union. Hector was the union man at Leeds when I was there. But from what I know of the situation, it's certainly not proactive, Nathan, for these for the players, the older players like Nobby Stiles, and Roger Hunt, and many, many others.
Well, that's it. The many, many others as well. You're talking there, Roger Hunt, Nobby Stiles, two of the greatest players of their generation. If they're being treated like this, if they're being forgotten about like this, God knows about those who spent so many years playing further down the divisions.
Well, exactly. That needs some sort of inquiry, in my opinion, Nathan. You know, Martin Peters also has it. And we don't know how many players. I think Gordon Taylor, who was the secretary of the Professional Football Association, was asked fairly recently how many players have got Alzheimer's from the old days. He said, "I don't know." Well, they should know.
Mm.
They should go out of the way. See, they're not. I know they're well considered not to be proactive. You have to go to them, Nathan. Right. Well, most people don't want to go to them. They don't want to go with looking for charity or looking for handouts. And it shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah, there's no shortage of money in the PFA right now, and it's only going to increase. And I know Jeff Astle's family have done a huge amount of work with this as well. It's a very sad story. I know it's Nobby Stiles' birthday. I think it's tomorrow he's celebrating his birthday, so we wish him well. And John, great to talk to you as always.
Thanks, Nathan.
John Giles there. That'll be up on offtheball.com very shortly. Up next, we're going to talk hurling with Dahi Regan and Tommy Dunn.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.